trips away in Europe, the emotional highs, the euphoria of playing at the elite level of European competition, and then coming not back down to earth, but almost down to the bread and butter of here we go again. It's relentless, and teams do look to really go for you off the back of Champions League fixtures. They see you as a major scalp, as will Ipswich today. See it as a massive opportunity to pick up points, looking with Villa playing Bayern Munich midweek, looking like they may, you think, as a player, you're thinking they might have their eye on that a little bit. They may be, some players, a little bit like keeping a bit in reserve, worried about maybe getting injured, because that is the tile that everyone will want to play in.
I've got to say, I'm guilty of this as well, because we're talking about Villa playing in the Champions League, but we forget that Villa also played in Europa League last year, and off the back of being in Europa League, they had their best season in Premier League history to qualify for the Champions League. Mm-hmm. So that element of balance with Unai Emery, they kind of did it well last year.
But don't you think it's the occasion more than the two games in 4 days? They've done that all their career, those players. It's more the fact that this time you play Bayern and then Manchester United 4 days later.
Yeah, that can play into it, but you could make a case that that is basically how the back end of last season was for them when they were in the knockout rounds of the European competition.
True.
Because for Bayern Munich, to play Bayern Munich...
they're on a similar size to Bayern, though.
Well, let's put it this way. A game against Bayern Munich in the second group game is going to be very different to playing against Bayern if it was in the knockout rounds in April time.
Yeah, but even in the knockout round last season, they played Lille, for example. You know, they never played the Bayern, or they would have Juventus in November and then Chelsea 4 days later at Stamford Bridge.
They were in the Conference League last year, isn't it?
Yeah, in the Conference League. So they went far, which was great, and then Olympiacos was the team beat them in semi-final. It's not Juve or Bayern.
Yeah, of course it's not Juve or Bayern, but I'm more so talking about the timing of it. And I think in regards to last year as well, there was a point where something really significant happened, and we think we sort of glossed over it last season. So Arsenal were playing Bayern Munich in the midweek in the knockout rounds, and they had Villa at home on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And some people saying, oh, Arsenal might struggle because, you know, they're playing in Europe and this, that and the other. But Villa were playing on the Thursday, and then Villa travelled to Arsenal and beat Arsenal in that game. Those were two massive games for Villa, and I think it ended up that perhaps they won both games. So the scheduling side of things, I think they're capable of dealing with it. Yes, you could be looking ahead to this game, but it's so early in the season that I don't think it's going to be a case that the manager's going to allow them to be thinking about playing Bayern Munich. Because even this Bayern Munich game, whether they win, draw or lose, does it really affect, given the fact that two extra games as it stands?
Yeah.
Does it affect whether they're going to be in the knockout rounds in the next stage? Probably not. And because Emery's in charge, I think they'll be okay.
That's what you've got, right? You've got a manager in Unai Emery who has enormous amount of experience playing in European football. So he's probably the perfect man to be in the position that he's in with Aston Villa and guiding him through this opportunity, this you know, the moment of playing in European football and making the most of it.
Mark, ever since we've had you on, Australia have started taking wickets.
Of course. That's honestly no surprise. I was expecting that to happen anyway.
Come on then, Nikesh.
Yeah, they're pulling it back here, the Australians. Adam Zampa with the wicket of Liam Livingston, having him caught behind off by Josh Inglis off a faint outside edge. Livingston down the track, looking to force one through the offside, getting nowhere near it in the end. So Ben Duckett, frustrated in the 90s still at the other end, seeing wickets fall at the opposite side. 92 from 76 is Livingston, Duckett rather. Livingston on his way back. England 216 for 5 in the 29th over.
Mark, just one more on this before we move on to Ipswich. I'm interested to know, like, for example, when you played under Jose Mourinho at Chelsea, these managers who've won big European trophies like he has, like Unai Emery has, how much comes down to them when you are trying to make sure that all eyes are on the prize for the game that's in front of you?
I think there's a fair amount. There is obviously their experience, their presence within the change room, within the club, their experience of what they've done in that competition in the past. But it's also a big part of it is the players. I mean, at Chelsea at that time, it's probably a bad example to use because of the fact that every single one of those players had won things, had won major trophies, had knew what it was like to play at that elite level, knew what it was like. For them, it was normal to play two games a week at the level they were expected to. The minute you walk into the door at a club like Chelsea, certainly when I was there, there was the pressure and the expectation to win every single game, every competition, didn't matter what it was. And it wasn't just, yeah, that's what we're expecting. No. They genuinely believe that that's what they could do, and they were demanding it day in, day out. And I think So there's a combination of having that manager of status and experience, but also the players that know what it takes to play in those competitions week in, week out.
Andy, we're going to talk about Ipswich's club captain in a second. Before we do, Jack Clark, very exciting player, isn't he, and deserves to be in the Premier League.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I mean, I think he's a really, really good player. I think he's shown over a number of years at Sunderland what he could do, and I think he deserves his opportunity back in the Premier League again. Had a couple of moves when he was younger, and maybe didn't quite work out. And I think became really settled at Sunderland, and ended up being able to produce some of his really good football. A couple of times that I've seen him last season, it was a little bit of a mixed bag. And one thing that I want to see from him is him just being really, really positive. I want to see him getting our players. I want to see him inside, outside, getting crosses into the box, coming inside, scoring goals. I think he's a far better player when he's being really, really positive. So I want to see him doing that in the Premier League. You know, being really on the front foot, being really aggressive, taking on the 1v1 duels, getting you know, the people in the stadium to the edge of the seat, and really exciting people. So I think if he can do that, then he can do well again.
Yeah, they'll be hoping that he's going to add some goals as well from wide positions. It was actually Sam Morsey, holding midfielder, who scored a really important goal in stoppage time against Southampton in their last game. It got them a point, so that's 3 unbeaten now for Ipswich Town. Here's manager Kieran McKenna on his captain.
Yeah, it was never in doubt in my mind that amongst all the, you know, decisions that we had to make in the summer, I think Sam was always going to be the club captain this year and be an absolute integral part of the football club as we move forward and as we try and establish ourselves as a Premier League club and as a, you know, develop our culture with a new group of players and some new staff. He was always going to be integral to that. From performance wise, I think his performances were really strong last season in the Championship, and again, that was maybe his first season that he'd been operating at the very, very top end of the Championship, and I think he performed very well and more than deserved his chance to be a big part on the pitch this season as well. And he came back and he performed well in pre-season, and he's performing well in the early game. So yeah, he's still got improving to do, he's still got growth to make to be performing as well as he possibly can, and he's, you know, the mindset who will always be striving to get better. But it's really good to have him here still as an important player for us off the pitch and on the pitch.
That's Kieran McKenna. Actually, Nick Ames in The Guardian did a brilliant interview with Sam Morsey last month, talked about his dad being a hotel porter, the graft that his parents put in. They worked together in a pizza shop. He is, Ali, I mean, he's obviously a very important player and he's the captain, but the fans absolutely love Sam Morsey.
Yeah, so he's now in his fourth season at Ipswich, Steve, having joined from Middlesbrough. He has just blossomed beautifully, you know, for the club and in his time at the club. And I thought Kieran McKenna made a really important point there. And I think actually players like him, really important for a club like Ipswich that have come flying up through two divisions. And we see it so often, don't we, with teams that get promoted and suddenly make a mass raft of changes. And you lose that sort of little bit of identity and connection with the fans, and it takes a while to settle things. And there's a guy who sits right in the heart of the Ipswich team, who has, as he's gone up in the last couple of seasons with the club, has stepped it up himself, bringing other players up with him as well. And I think that goal he scored last week was huge, just in terms of maintaining the little bit of, okay, we know that Ipswich Town haven't won a game yet, but I think to lose away to Southampton, who were also looking for a first win, would have been a massive blow. And just to get that goal and be the guy who scored that goal is huge for the club, taking it into a game like today.
He's 33 years old now.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. Again, going back to the Solanke journey or Sam Morsey's journey is incredible too, when you think about it. And some players can't make the step up from the lower leagues to the Premier League. We talked about Andy earlier when he went to Spurs, he went from the Championship to the Premier League. Some players are just Championship level. Others work hard maybe, or just have that in them to make that step up, which is really not easy. The gap between the two leagues is so big. It's so big. So credit to him, really, even at that age. I guess all the experience helps, but to be able to settling in like that in the Premier League, I think is very, very special.
So I've got to say, having played in the Premier League and in the Championship, there are lots of players in the Championship who could play in the Premier League, but it's such a tough league to get out of that you need at times to just be in the right situation almost. Because if you are, say, above probably the age of 25, 26, it's unlikely that you'd be transferred to the Premier League. But then there are other people, like in this Ipswich team as well. One of my friends is actually in the squad who I played with at QPR, Massimo Luongo. Mm. And he played in the first game of the season against Liverpool, then the week later for Man City. And this is this is an Australian international. This is somebody who was like Australia's player of the tournament at the Asian Cup, that type of thing. And he's making his debut in the Premier League at 32 years of age. Yeah. But he's gone through the ranks and now he's got a chance to test himself. And whether he does well or he does badly, the opportunity is there. And it is that case of, you know, if you find yourself in the right situation, you can gain opportunity. And it's not, as I say, there's no guarantee you do well, but opportunity is the thing that's key overall.
I think the thing with Sam Morsy, and I think Kieran McKenna touched on it really, really well, there's two parts to it. There's the performance on the pitch, which is massively, massively important, and we know that, but also the culture behind the scenes, and does he drive that day in, day out? Now, if you're going to survive in the Premier League, you need to have a harmony in the dressing room. You need to have everybody pulling in the same direction. And I think Sam Morsy, from the outside looking in, looks like he's a major, major part of that. And it can't be understated, because when it gets to them last few games, if they want to feel like they've still got a chance of staying up, they're going to need to stick together, and you know, he'll be huge for that.
Delighted to say we've been joined live on Five Live by the Ipswich CEO Mark Ashton. Mark, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
We're just rolling through all your great recruitment in recent years. I'm sure you're enjoying that.
Oh, very nice, very nice. Great to be with you all.
When you sit there now watching your club in the Premier League, what is the day or time that you think back to which really sort of says to you, wow, we have come such a long way?
Yeah, you know what, I'd like to be honest with you and say I don't think that's actually happened. You know, we've rolled on back-to-back promotions and there has just been no time to breathe in both pre-seasons, and 12 players in, numerous players out, loan players moving, etc. this summer. It's been so busy, including a new contract and a manager. You know, you don't have time to almost sit back, relax and enjoy it. We have to get on with it and we have to be ready to compete in the biggest league in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the manager and obviously, you know, we could talk all day about new signings in terms of players. Getting him, when to the outside it looked like you might lose him, I mean, that must still feel incredibly important.
It's pivotal. You know, what we've built over the last 3 years with Kieran has been quite special. We've worked as a group, as a team. Our relationships on and off the pitch have been extremely strong. I'm not silly. I've been in this game a long time. I anticipated that we would get the door knocked. Did I anticipate the size of clubs that would knock the door? Probably not. But I think it's testament to him that he understands this journey is not completed.
Were you always confident that he was going to stay?
I'd like to say yes, but I wouldn't be that arrogant. You know, we spent the best part of a week talking about things. I didn't try and persuade him to stay here, by the way. I just pointed out the strengths and weaknesses of the clubs that were talking to him compared with the journey that we were on. And I think ultimately, people talk about clubs and size of clubs, but for me, it's about the people. And it's about the trust in the people. It's about the solid, calm behaviour that when things go wrong, we stay as a team, we work as a team. And I think ultimately, whilst Ipswich Town, the club, was vitally important to him, it was the people here, it was the ownership, the people he brought in. And as I've said, this journey is nowhere near over.
How do you assess the start of this season so far? Is it as what you expected? Is it harder than you thought? I mean, you've had tough games, obviously, already in the first five and six today. Are you where you thought you would be, or maybe below you thought where you would be?
No, I think we're probably about where I thought we would be, if I'm honest with you. I mean, look, let's be really clear. The quality, the athleticism, it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. And when you open up the first two games against Liverpool and Manchester City, even though you dare to dream at times, the reality is you know you're going to probably come out of those games with no points. So, you know, once those two games were done, I think our season started. And, you know, the facts are the facts. We're unbeaten in three.
Mark, if you could indulge me, after you see your side or the team's being promoted and you need to now create a plan for the Premier League, how do you actually decide what you need to give yourself the best opportunity? Because you talk about the athleticism there, but how do you measure that? And how do you, as I say, create a squad of players and a setup which makes you think you've got the best chance?
I think, look, Kieran and I talk so much. We've talked about the DNA of this club with the rebuild of this club over 3 years. And we put Premier League people and Premier League processes behind the scenes in place in League One because that was part of our plan to take us all the way through. The challenge when you get to, if you like, the Premier League from the Championship is the gap is so big. The challenge is so big. And we sat down in the summer and we said, look, Kieran felt we're probably going to lead at least 10, maybe more new players to compete. So we went and we sat down with the board and we said, look, this is what we're going to need to spend. This is the opportunity we have. This is what we can spend with financial fair play. And the board were brilliant. The ownership was great. They said to Kieran and myself, then spend to the limit. Spend to what you can spend. Stick to your guns. Stick to the plan. And then Kieran and I sat down with the recruitment team and his coaching staff and identified the technical abilities of the player that we want, the athleticism that we want. And we set about our work. And, you know, 4 or 5 weeks later, there's 12 new players in the door.
Really interested, Mark, as well, in that question of the ownership. Because, of course, that was you for 13-odd years. And there's a lot of US investment in English football now. So you go back to 2021 when you had to make that decision to sell. How did you know that you'd found the right people? Because these things don't always work out.
No, it's a great question. Look, I've been in this game a long time. And when we constructed this takeover and this ownership group, they wanted me to come in and run the club. And my request was really simple. If you want me to do this, then you contract me in the following way. You own it, you invest in it. I will write the plan, you'll challenge the plan, but once we've agreed the plan, you leave us alone and you let management run the football club. So the ownership were brilliant. They didn't get involved in the recruitment of the manager. They don't get in recruitment of the players. They don't attend the training ground. They're not in the dressing rooms. We're not a vanity. We're not a TV show. We're a sanity investment. We're not perfect, but we're trying to build something that's ultra-professional with the likes of Kieran and his staff are ultra-professional people. We don't get it right all the time. But where we are so lucky is that ownership pump oxygen into us and just tell us to get on with our jobs. They are experts in their field, in the business in the US, but they understand that the management of the football club should be allowed, unencumbered, to run the business. And I think that's where we're very different and we're very, very fortunate.
That's really interesting as well, because I imagine you'll have had the conversation with them in the exact same way you've just explained it to us, which must be a difficult balance, because you're kind of telling these people this is how it must work, even though they're the people putting the money in. So that's not easy either.
It's not. It was probably, but it was a requisite. As if they wanted me as their chief executive and then their chairman, that was the only way I would take this role on, because I'm happy to stand and fall by the decisions that I make or Kieran make. But the analogy I give to them is this: look, gentlemen, if you ask me to fly a plane tomorrow, unfortunately, the one thing I tell you I'm going to do is I'm going to crash it, because I don't have the skill set or the knowledge to press the right buttons to fly that plane safely. In football, in English football, we're in a very regulated industry. It's a really tough industry. Appoint professionals, support them, challenge them, but empower them to do their jobs. And I am so fortunate at the ownership group here. They've stuck to that day one. They've listened to management. They've challenged us. They give us a hard time, be under no illusion. But they don't get in the way, and they just pump energy and oxygen in us to be the best versions that we can be of ourselves. And I think that's helped Kieran, it's helped myself, and it's helped the rest of the management team here at Portman Road.
Mark, just before we let you go, it would be remiss of me not to ask you about something which is far more important than anything else that we've discussed this afternoon in general. Tell us about your tattoo.
I made a commitment to this amazing fan base that if we got promoted, I would have the Ipswich crest and the Southwark punch on my wrist. I've done that. I'm very proud of it. This fan base has been incredible. I felt they took me inside 3 years ago and really looked after me. And together we've built something quite extraordinary. And again, today is really special. You may just pick up the twang in my accent. I was 16 years at West Bromwich Albion. I'm a black country boy. So we're playing against the Villa. He's always a bit special.
If you step, Mark, what's the next tattoo then?
I'll have to give that some thought.
Great stuff, Mark. Brilliant to have you on. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. CEO at Ipswich Town, Mark Ashton, owned the club for many, many years as well. Ipswich Town versus Aston Villa coming up in full at 2 o'clock on 5 Live Premier League Sunday. Meanwhile, 100 up for Ben Duckett. Nick Ash.
Yep, 100 up off just 86 balls, 13 fours and a six in that innings for the left-handed opener here for England. His second ODI 100, both coming on this ground. He's also got five other scores of over 50 in this format in just his 16th match. So he started his ODI career brilliantly well. He's having a job to do here just to glue this England innings together after the loss of those three quick wickets. The Aussies are still just managing to keep the chokehold on England as far as the scoring rate is concerned in the last few overs. 33 overs gone. England batting first at 231 for five.
And there's live commentary right now with the team on Five Sports Extra. Brighton won at Manchester City in the WSL last season. They're up against it now, Mike Miner.
Yeah, and that was the last time Manchester City failed to score in the WSL. Funnily enough, no such problems today. Right on the edge of half-time, Manchester City 1, Brighton 0. Bunny Shaw flicking on a Kasper Eye low cross from the left-hand side for her first of the WSL season. Plenty of warning signs in the first half, mostly involving Shaw, as you'd be not surprised to hear. Brighton themselves, though, haven't been quiet. A couple of big chances just before Manchester City scored. But at the break, Manchester City 1, Brighton 0.
Other games in the WSL today. Everton versus Manchester United at 2. Leicester Arsenal at 3. Same time for West Ham against Liverpool. And then the 4:30 game is Aston Villa versus Tottenham. You will be kept right up to date during Five Lives Premier League Sunday. Lots more to come from Portman Road ahead of Ipswich versus Aston Villa. Let's have a quick look back on Saturday now, focusing in on Liverpool, top of the Premier League table as it stands. I don't think I've done this so far this season, so let's do it now. Liverpool played 6, 15 points. Manchester City on 14, Arsenal on 14, Chelsea on 13, all from 6 matches. Then Aston Villa on 12, meaning they could go with Liverpool if they win, level with Liverpool if they win at Portman Road this afternoon. Arne Slotside beat Wolves 2-1 in the late game on Saturday, but he's not getting overexcited.
Are you a coach that thinks maybe we've had to work a little bit harder than I thought we would today ahead of the Champions League, or do you not even think about that?
No, I don't think that's for us to think like this. We know where we've been the last two seasons. So 2 seasons ago we ended up 5th. Last season, 3rd. 2 seasons ago, when we ended up 5th, there was also Champions League involved. Now we have to prove that if we are involved in the Champions League, we can stay up there where we are now. But we also understand that the fixtures have been difficult, like every game in the Premier League. But most of the team we faced were bottom league table.
And finally, you're up there looking down on the rest of them. Top of the table. How does that feel?
Feels good. You want to be up there, but it doesn't tell me that much. Like I said, if you look at Wolves, they're, I think, down in the table. But they did much, much, much better than being there. And we had quite a good schedule till now. It tells me something after 19 games, but not after 6.
Arne Slot speaking to Match of the Day's Jonathan Pearce. We've got Andy Reid, Nader Manua, Julian Laurent all with us. I think it was interesting, Nadim, that he sort of, I mean, he wouldn't have said before the games that it was an easier start to the season. Now he's won them, he feels like he can say that.
Yeah, that's completely fair. And I think for him coming in, he obviously wanted to have a good start. Maybe when he looked at the fixtures, they thought, yeah, we can do that. But he's still got to get across the line. And the fact that they've done that whilst also, we shouldn't forget they did beat Man United. Is that one of those easy games you're talking about?
I didn't talk about it. Arne Slot.
He said bottom half of the table.
Yeah, United Old Trafford, one of those easy games, is it? Yeah. Back in my day. But yeah, you've got to be happy. You've seen some players playing really well. There's really good attacking football defensively overall in terms of goals they've conceded. They look like they're in a good spot and they feel better than they were at certain points last season, arguably, which I think is credit to the manager, because I think a lot of people, perhaps myself included, expected some level of disruption, but it doesn't necessarily feel like that at this moment in time. And it is early, but I'm sure the view from the top feels nice for them.
It's always good to start that way, right? They will have bigger tests. They will play at some point Real Madrid, City and Newcastle all back-to-back. I think they've got like Chelsea, Leipzig and Arsenal back-to-back as well. One in October, one in November. So those three games, like period, if you want, would be big for them. But they only conceded 2 goals. And to be fair, against Wolves, it's a bit of a misunderstanding, miscommunication between Alisson and Konate that creates that goal. Apart from that, they were pretty solid, I thought. And maybe they lacked a little bit of creativity yesterday compared to what we saw previously, but they look so good. And for somebody who's so new and coming after Klopp especially, this is it. Because if Slot had arrived in a team that hadn't played well for a few years and, you know, it was a rebuilding process, might have been different. But coming after Klopp, 9 years of Klopp, with all the success that they've had, the clear identity, the relationship between Klopp and the fans and everything, to arrive after that and already put his, you could see his own style and his own touch on things is really, really remarkable.
Yeah, listen, they weren't amazing by any stretch last night, you know, but what they were really, really professional. They turned up the dial a couple of notches when they needed it. They got the goals at the right times, which is obviously really important. And I think they seen out the game really, really well. You talk about game management, and I know there's been a lot spoken about the dark arts and stuff, but there's other ways that you can manage a game as well. And that's by keeping the ball, and that's by keeping your shape. And what I was really impressed with, there was a period just probably about 5 minutes after they got the second goal last night, and Wolves had put Lamina back to centre back, and he was getting on the ball quite a bit. Liverpool didn't really jump out of the slot and really, really go after them. They stayed in their in the positions. Now, what that done is it forced Wolves to just play the ball across the back line for must have been probably 90 seconds, and it just took the sting out of it. The crowd started to kind of drop a little bit. Now, you probably wouldn't have seen that over the last few years with a Klopp team. They probably would have gone after the ball. So I think what you're starting to see there is some of the slight differences. You know, it's maybe not so much the heavy metal. They've still got intensity. They've still got the athleticism, and they will go after the ball at the right times. But they showed a degree of maturity last night that I think was really good in the last 20 minutes, and almost kind of sucked the life out of the Wolves fans and the Wolves players. So that's what I say when I say it was a really professional performance and really, really good game management. And I kind of said in the commentary in the last 20 minutes, I said, if Liverpool are going to be serious title contenders, they need to get over the line in games like this where it's going to be quite tight. They're not going to run away with it. And they did that they did that really well.
Australia have just taken a big wicket, Nick Ashwagandhi.
Yeah, it's the huge one of Ben Duckett, gone for 107 from 91. And it's the part-time off-spin of Travis Head that has managed to dismiss him. So all the world-class stuff that they threw at him early on, he managed to deal with. Travis Head comes in, bowls a bit of a lollipop kind of delivery, floated one up outside the off-stump. Duckett thought, I'll have a bit of this. Tried to smash it down the ground, miscued it, and a pretty simple catch taken running in from long off by Josh Hazlewood. So England in a bit of trouble now. We're into the 34th over. They're 238 for six, and we've got Jacob Bethel and Brydon Carse at the crease. So at one stage it was looking like 400 perhaps. They might struggle to get anywhere near 275 at this stage. 238 for six in the 34th over.
And live commentary right now on Five Sports Extra. Jules, as you know, the attacking talent Liverpool have got, we speak so much about that, which is all great. I wonder if there is an argument that actually their best player so far this summer has been a player who they didn't expect to be playing in the position he's in, and that's Ryan Gravenberch.
Yeah, remember we talked about him earlier in the season, about this switch from a more attacking role, if you want, that he's had all his career pretty much, to this kind of six in a double pivot, him and McAllister, and what that meant to him, to his game, how will he adapt or not adapt, and I think there's still some work to be done defensively from his point of view. And at times, not so much yesterday, but at times in defensive transition from a Liverpool point of view, I think you're a little bit exposed and maybe a little bit fragile. But with the ball, I mean, he showed why he was so highly rated as a teenager when he was in the Netherlands with Ajax. Because it's the way he breaks the lines on the ball. He's so bold and he's so strong and so good technically that a bit like a Pogba used to do at his best, he gets the ball on the half turn, turns and then goes forward with the ball, which I find is quite incredible. He can do it with a pass, but it's that kind of powerful runs that he make with the ball. There was one in the second half yesterday where he goes into the box that is like, wow, okay. And to do that in a double pivot role, again, Pogba springs to mind, but not many players have been able to do it.
Ryan Gravenberch plays like Paul Pogba at his best. Coming soon to a social media feed.
I hope for him, but he reminds me of him for sure this season so far.
The irony, Nadim, is that they obviously tried to sign a player, Zubimendi, to play in that position. So actually, I mean, I'm sure he would have been a brilliant player to sign, and maybe they'll go for him again, but Gravenberch has just slotted in superbly.
Yeah, he's done supremely well. We could talk about players that Liverpool tried to sign as well, because the year earlier it was like Lavia, it was Caicedo, it was everyone, but the midfield that they have is a very impressive midfield with others to come back in as well. And it is good to see. And the change that he's gone through in terms of being more offensive and now him being a bit deeper. To talk about my experience, and I think Andy maybe played with him, it's slightly different, but do you remember Moussa Dembele?
Yeah.
Honestly, he was one of my favourite players, you know.
Yeah.
Like, when he was in attack, he was great. But when he went into midfield, that boy could play. Try and get the ball off him. Try your best, because it's not going to happen. And it just shows, I think, people have traits and managers can sort of find something within some of these guys that maybe they don't even believe they have themselves. And with good coaching, you can gain an understanding. And him just being out there on the pitch, I think this is probably one of the most extended spells that he's had in the last few years, playing and being trusted by a manager wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the benefit, because I think at times last year in games that I watched, it didn't really feel like he was connecting as such with Liverpool fans. He was kind of on the outside.
That's true.
But now it makes perfect sense, and you know that he can continue to get better as well, because he's such a young player.
Yeah, I think Jules touched on the important part and why he's been so good in both of the transitions. So yesterday in the defensive transitions, you thought that Liverpool could be exposed with the amount of men that they commit forward, but he mopped up really, really well. He read the game really well. Now also then you've got the flip side of that. Liverpool want to try and not be playing against a low block all the time. So the attacking transitions, and they have to be done at real pace, become really, really important. So when you do win the ball back, and say Wolves yesterday use an example, as they commit a few men forward, if you can break a line with a pass and you can get the ball into Diaz, you can get the ball into Jota, who was dropping into the 10 position, Szoboszlai, you know, all these players, if you can give them the ball early and get them running. I mean, there was a period in the second half where he kept getting the ball out to Salah, and Salah had a 10 minute period where he just kept getting at the fullback, and it becomes really, really difficult. But giving the ball really, really early before the Wolves players have a chance to retreat and get kind of 10 men behind the ball is really important, and he'd done it exceptionally well.
Great start to the season for Liverpool, top of the league on 15 points after 6 games, and as we said, Aston Villa will join them on 15 after 6 if they beat Ipswich at Portman Road. Full commentary on the way in exactly half an hour's time, so we'll be back there very shortly indeed. We'll keep you updated on the cricket. England 243 for 6 off 35 overs in that decisive one day international with Australia. Live commentary right now on 5 Sports Extra. What about Rangers Hibs in the Scottish Premiership, Gavin Wallace?
68 gone, still Rangers 1, Hibs 0. And to be honest, Steve, Rangers really haven't looked that clever in the second half. I can't really remember much of a chance they've had. But Hibs, though, seem to be turning a bit of a screw and putting a lot of pressure on. A couple of half chances, Jack Bullen said to make a couple of saves. But as I say, it's still Rangers 1, Hibs 0.
And the halftime score in the Women's Super League, thanks to a goal from Khadija Shaw, is Manchester City 1, Brighton 0. We'll be talking rugby union, then we'll focus fully on Ipswich versus Aston Villa after the news on 5 Live with Alison Hughes.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Lebanon's Prime Minister says the ongoing Israeli attacks against Hezbollah have displaced around 1 million people. Airstrikes on Beirut killed the Hezbollah leader, Hassan Nasrallah, on Friday. Peter Lerner is a spokesperson for the Israeli Defence Forces.
In the aftermath of Nasrallah's elimination, we are seeking out those that are trying or potentially to become the next leaders. So it's taking out those capabilities. And indeed, we took out yesterday a senior member of the intelligence capabilities of Hezbollah.
Police are investigating the death of an 8-year-old boy in Cumbria after he was shot in the head and face at a farm yesterday. Officers seized a firearm and arrested a man in his 60s. He's currently being questioned on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter. The Cabinet Minister, Pat McFadden, says he's disappointed but not surprised by Rosie Duffield's decision to quit as a Labour MP. She'll now sit in the House of Commons as an independent. In her resignation letter, she described the two-child benefit cap as cruel and unnecessary. Here's our chief political correspondent, Henry Zeffman.
She said that she thought the Prime Minister had a woman problem, for example. She talked of the lads, who she said were advisers around him, very male-dominated. And crucially, and this might be concerning for the Labour leadership, she said that this was how a lot of Labour backbenchers, a lot of Labour MPs, like she was until yesterday at 5pm, also feel about the Prime Minister and about his team.
A former Russian spy and his daughter, who were poisoned by the nerve agent Novichok in Salisbury in 2018, will not have to give oral evidence to a public inquiry. The judge overseeing the hearings said there was an overwhelming risk of an attack on Sergei and Yulia Skripal. The public inquiry begins next month.
I have more diamonds than the Queen of England.
Welcome to the world of thieves and hoaxers and con women.
She does sound fabulous, though. Massive dogs, lots of cars.
But who are these lady swindlers? And did they get away with their frauds and deceptions by using their feminine characteristics?
I am the notorious Tilly Devine.
She's a bit of a one-off, really.
Lady Swindlers with Lucy Worsley. Where true crime meets history. Listen first on BBC Sounds.
This is Five Live Sport.
With Steve Crossman.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Straight back to Bristol, Nick Ashwagandhi.
Yeah, we're England. Still 6 wickets down here, 245 for 6 after 37th over here. And Adam Zampa, after taking some tap early on, now coming back into things, keeping things very tight, putting a lid on England's scoring rate, which has now, for the first time in a very long time, come back down below 7 runs and over after that wicket of Ben Duckett, who went for 107. The England tail-enders doing their best to hang on here, but Australia on top as things stand. England 246 for 6 in the 37th over.
Five Sports Extra for full commentary. Back at Portman Road shortly, 25 minutes to go until kick-off in our first commentary of this Premier League Sunday, which is Ipswich Town against Aston Villa. Then we'll be inside Old Trafford for Manchester United against Tottenham at 4:30. Let's talk rugby now. Leicester take on Bath at Welford Road in the Gallagher Premiership. Kick-off at 3 o'clock. It's Michael Checker's first home game as coach. Here he is speaking to the Rugby Union Weekly podcast at the start of the season.
Well, I think I've changed over the years. Like, I suppose when I was with Leinster, I knew the team needed to change, and I had to make a decision at the end of that, like a 2010, do I want to change and do that, or would I prefer to keep doing what I'm doing? And I ended up decided I'll take a break and try and do something else and put that stamp on it, and then they transferred into a different type of coach in Joe. And I thought that was really good for them. They needed that, a different style. And I suppose I've now thought about changing a little bit more. I feel like can assess the resources that are, and the players that are at the club. Also, you've got to look back at what they've had as a history, a recent history, how they've been coached, what's been the parameters around the game, what the environment's felt like from the human side, you know, and from mental preparation side, you know, and try and step that in the direction you want to go, as opposed to coming in saying, oh, this is how it's going to be now. Move it out in stages, almost without people realising, you know, and in a way, because there's a lot of good things that's been, even though maybe last year wasn't the greatest year, there was still a lot of good things that happened that year, and I want to make sure that those things stay, you know, yeah. And then that we can build on those things and take it the direction we want to go.
That's Michael Checker speaking on the Rugby Union Weekly podcast. Correspondent Chris Jones is at Welford Road for us today. Does it feel like a good fit, that, for you, Chris?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is one of the biggest named coaches in the world game, Steve. You know, when you think of the super coaches in that sort of category with a Warren Gatland and an Eddie Jones and a Joe Schmidt, you know, you think of football and the Guardiolas and Carlo Ancelotti, Thomas Tuchel. There is a sort of a rare breed of coach who have this level of experience and aura because of what they've achieved in the game. And Checker is certainly in that category. Spoke about his stint at Leinster. He's coached in France. He's coached the Wallabies, Australia to World Cup final. He's coached Argentina to a World Cup semi-final, but never coached in the Premiership. This season, his first experience. Last weekend, the late win at Exeter, his first Premiership game. And today, as you say, his first experience of Welford Road. And what an experience. High-flying Bath in town, packed out Welford Road, one of the marquee fixtures in the English Premiership calendar this.
I actually just like listening to him talk, Chris, because of the way he speaks as well. I mean, even if you hadn't outlined his achievements and his CV and everything, you can almost hear in his voice the sort of calmness and, yeah, you use the word aura.
Yeah, when we say calmness, he'll sit a few metres to my left, and when he doesn't like a refereeing decision, I wouldn't describe it as calm. So he's got a volatile side, make no mistake. But also in that chat we did with him on the pod, we asked about his motivation, because he's a super successful businessman. He doesn't need the money. He could be sitting at home doing his business interests and not coaching another game of rugby, but he absolutely loves it. You may remember a couple of autumns ago, he was job sharing and coaching Lebanon Rugby League while coaching Argentina on their November tour. So he was coaching at the Rugby League World Cup and coaching the Pumas against England at Twickenham in 1 week. So this is the guy who gets driven by challenges, and this is a big one. Leicester had a poor season last time out. There are plenty of teams in the league that are further down the journey when it comes to their development, whether it might be Northampton some of them might be today's opponents, Bath. I don't know if Checker is one of those sort of forensic detail tactical coaches that you see in the game at the moment, but in terms of force of personality, environment, aura, he ticks all those boxes. So it could be so interesting how he gets on this season with the Tigers.
Anthony Watson has had a lot of challenges as well. Good to see him back playing.
For sure. And even though a new crop of wingers have come through to make an impression with the England side, Manny Fayiwaboso has had a brilliant breakthrough year or so. Tommy Freeman, likewise, a Premiership champion. There have been experienced wingers leaving the scene. Johnny May and Jack Noel now out of the reckoning in France. But Anthony Watson is one of these experienced heads who has been there and done it. And if he can get back to anywhere near the kind of form that saw him help England to a World Cup final in 2019, star for the Lions in 2017, star for the Lions in 2021, if he can get back to those levels, he will certainly play for England again. I say he's 30, and you could say, well, he's the wrong side of 30, but he's only 30. And you've seen so many players go deep into their 30s. And if he can look after himself and if he can get that sharpness back after a nine-month injury absence, then, yeah, he'll be well on Steve Borthwick's radar. And so that return to the heights for Anthony Watson starts this afternoon.
I suppose if it wasn't for Michael Checker's first home game, the story would probably very much be Bath, because there's a lot of excitement around this Bath team. They started by beating Northampton, who were the champions. 30 years since they last won the league. So what are the credentials, do you think?
Oh, they've got plenty. I mean, this was a team that should have won the league last season, had that epic scrap with Northampton in the Twickenham final with 14 men. Benno Mabana was off by half an hour. They had to go to the well with 14, and they very nearly beat the Saints, who were the favourites that day. So was that their opportunity missed, or is that just a step on their journey? We talk a lot, don't we, in sport about needing to go through some pain before you win the big prizes. Bath will hope that last season and that final was just the extra level of motivation, extra level of experience needed to now go all the way. I'm just seeing Ollie Lawrence, the England star, walking towards the tunnel. Finn Russell's out there. Ben Spencer, world-class number nine, or certainly one of the best in the Premiership. We know all about Finn Russell. They've got the best scrum in the league. They're a power pack, Bath. So they have all the tools. You got to go and do it, though, when the chips are down. It matters the most come May and June. But certainly, yes, Saracens looked good yesterday. Yes, Northampton are the champions. But many people think this Bath team are ready to take that next step. And as you say, end a whopping three-decade wait for the big prize.
The wrong side of 30. That's what their wait has been.
Sure.
Chris, thank you very much. Chris
good
Jones,
stuff,
great stuff. Correspondent at Leicester versus Bath. Brilliant game, that. 3 o'clock. That one gets underway. We will keep you right up to date. Right, we've been away for a couple of minutes talking about something else. So obviously England have lost another wicket, Nikesh.
Yeah, they have indeed. And it's another one for Travis Head. Usually we're seeing him scoring runs at the top of the order for Australia, but he's taken a couple of wickets here. First, Ben Duckett for 107. And he's just dismissed Jacob Bethell for 13 from 27 balls. Had him stumped, drew him out of his crease, got one to turn past the outside edge. He dragged his back foot out of the crease, and a good bit of quick glove work from Josh Inglis to whip the bails off. England in some real trouble now with Brydon Carson, Adil Rashid at the crease. They're 253 for 7 after 38 overs.
Nikesh, just on the wickets that have gone down then, because when we came on air, we were talking so much about how England were absolutely rattling along. They were scoring runs so quickly.
Yep.
And they have still been scoring quickly. How disappointed will they be in the manner in which they've lost these wickets? Because you saw how well they were playing early on. All of a sudden, they're very unlikely to get through the 50 overs.
Absolutely. Look, you can see from the reactions from the England fans around the stadium that there is some disappointment at some of those shots that have been played, at some of the cricket where they could have been a little bit smarter and not needed to, you know, hit that one too many big shots and sort of haul out on the boundary. But speaking to the team and listening to what Harry Brook has been saying through this series as the skipper, this is the way they play. This is the way they're going to continue to play. They'll keep going hard, even if they lose wickets. That's just the way. That's their mantra. And look, it's frustrating for certain sections of the fans. But I think if you speak to the England team and the England management, they're going to say, look, this is our identity. This is what we do.
Yeah, we've been there before, haven't we? It's frustrating. It's exciting. And England look like they're going to be significantly short of par. But we will see. Thank you, Nikesh, and commentary right now on Five Sports Extras. We've got Andy Reid, Nader Manua, Julien Laurent with us. Just over 15 minutes to go until kickoff at Portman Road. Ipswich Town versus Aston Villa on the way in full with Ali Bruce Ball and probably quite a smug Mark Schwarzer at the moment, because every time we go back to Bristol there's another wicket.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. I'm loving it. And it's great to see, and hopefully Australia can pull it, you know, take it over the line and win the series.
So there you go, that's balance we can bring you on 5 Live this afternoon. Right, let's talk a bit about Aston Villa's attack, specifically Morgan Rodgers, one of the stars of this Premier League season so far, got another 2 assists in their 3-1 win against Wolves last weekend. And we talked about relationships a bit earlier, Mark. There's no doubt that him and Ollie Watkins have got one.
They've been really good, haven't they? I mean, Morgan Rodgers, I saw him play at Middlesbrough, and he was obviously a standout player for them. There was a big disappointment when they lost him to Aston Villa. And I think he's just taken that step up. Talked earlier on in the show, you guys in the studio, about the fact that players taking that leap up and how big a gap that is for the Championship to the Premier League. And there are players, there's a lot of players out there that could make that step up. It's whether or not given an opportunity, and obviously with Rodgers, they've been given that opportunity. He is a very good player on the ball. He holds the ball up well. He's got good vision. He's got good movement. And I think those sort of players around better players look even better. And he's obviously got the mentality to step up again as well. And that understanding since he's arrived at Villa has only grown.
Do you know, Andy, I've been thinking about this. Who do we think got the better deal on Morgan Rodgers? Middlesbrough, who signed him for £1 million and sold him for 8, rising possibly to 15 6 months later? Or Villa, who for a total of £15 million have got this player who might well be a full England international soon?
Yeah, I think they both got a great deal out of it, to be honest with you. I think it's worked out really well for both of them. I don't think Middlesbrough can complain about the money. I think it was fair. And then Villa have done the next stage to develop him into what they hopefully will be a Champions League player, kind of year on, year on. I seen him play for Lincoln. He was on loan at Lincoln the same year as Brennan Johnson. I think it was 2021. And I remember looking at him going, he's top notch, really, really good player. The way he moves, the way he gets past people, his close control, his physicality, he's got the physical attributes that it takes to be a modern day Premier League footballer. So I think, you know, I quite like his journey in some ways. You know, I like the way he's had to kind of do the loans, and then he's had to kind of get out and build his way kind of back up to where he is now, because not everybody's journey is as smooth as they would like it to be. Sometimes you have to, you know, go back down to build yourself back up again, and that will help him, because he's kind of got the miles under his belt. He's been through some of the different experiences in English football, and now he's experiencing the really, really top end in the Premier League and the Champions League. So he's a top class player, and I think he's one that, a little bit like Brennan, that's going to really, really improve over the next few years.
Another team you failed to mention, it's Man City, getting paid for him going to Villa as well, because he had a sell-on clause.
20%, I think it was, yeah.
25, yeah.
25.
25%. I don't know if they still have it, but yeah, that's some business. In terms of him, and this is good for you because you are the Borough specialist here, did you think he'd do as well as he has done for Villa so far, based on what you saw?
No. I mean, he looked like a very talented player, but he'd looked very good for 3 months.
Yeah.
And the 3 months prior to that, he couldn't get in the team.
Yeah. It's funny how football works, because we were talking before about opportunity, and then listening to the fact that Rodgers came through Man City's academy but didn't make it, quote-unquote, but still here he is playing in the Champions League. Just certain scenarios, certain situations that give you the opportunity to be able to play and find a different version of yourself. And I can tell another story here to talk about someone else that I played with. And this is probably one of the sillier ones within football. But I played with Danny Simpson 10 years ago. We went up in the playoff final with QPR against Derby. Then we got to the Premier League, and Danny basically gets told that he's not going to play because we're going to replace him with Mauricio Isla, I think a Chilean right back.
Yeah.
Really good player. So Danny leaves, and Danny's disappointed because he helped us be, you know, to get promoted back to the Premier League. A year and a half later, he's won the Premier League with Leicester.
Yeah.
So, and us as QPR, we're in the Championship. So Danny obviously has had a big part to play in both QPR being promoted and Leicester winning the Premier League title a year later. It's just to say that we think we know players, and especially for the way that you saw Rodgers, you saw him within that Middlesbrough setup. But the people who do some of this recruitment, they see things which we don't see some of the time. They see some trends, some data. Like I spoke with someone about, say, Rutter, for example, at Brighton.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's a lot of money for someone. But they said some of the information and data on him says he's one of the outstanding players, not just in England, but in European football. I was like, right, okay. Fair enough. Can't really argue with that. And now that's why, you know, he's got the opportunity.
He's from Paris as well, so he can...
Excuse me, everyone. It's my fault.
The thing with Rodgers is, and if you look at the the first five Premier League games, and even the Champions League game against Young Boys. But there's two assists for him to show there on paper, to go back to the point, the great point that Nadim just made about data. But if you actually look at the performances, he was outstanding. And I think he's only 22 years old and really has very limited experience yet of this top, top, top level, because he only arrived in January of this year. Because there's times where he carries the ball a little bit too much. There's too many touches there, you know, and there's options, and yet there's an extra touch that maybe he should not be doing. There's a couple of moments where he does something really well, and then when the bit of composure matters the most for the last pass or a shot or something, it's just, and this would be easily sorted for him because he's just a smart player, super talented player. So he looked really good already, even if the numbers don't back it up maybe so much, but he's going to get even better. And there's a reason why he still starts for this team with Unai Emery, despite players like Bailey on the bench and others. Really, the depth in this Villa squad is really interesting. And yet, he's a 22-year-old with, what, 8 months in the Premier League or 10 months in the Premier League that he's still starting in a very key position. It's because he's that good.
Yeah, for sure. I think the way you described that game against Young Boys, where he's got the two assists, but then his play was really, really good. That's, again, the reference to data. And again, this was 10 years ago, and I realised this, truly. We can look at people who have the most assists, but we turn a blind eye to people who create the most chances.
Yeah.
Somebody that has the most assists might be a really good set-piece taker. Someone that creates the most chances, who isn't necessarily taking set-pieces, could be a difference maker for a side, and that's why some people get recruited as such.
You know, I'm just thinking about the development of young players and kind of seeing it. I was only having this conversation with a coach the other day. The individual development of a player is so, so important. You can put them into a team and they can, you know, learn to play in the team and they can do all the bits that they want. But them to continue to develop as a player is so, so important. And not just for young players, for all players. I mean, I've seen players, you know, working with the first team, Forest, who, you know, people like, say, for instance, Ryan Yates, who's, 26 now. And the level of detail that he wants to go into to try and improve his individual development is incredible. And I think it's really, really important that we stress this to the young players as they're coming through there. Yeah, we want to develop you tactically, technically, and all the bits in the group sessions, but them individual sessions, just improve on your right foot, improve on your left foot, improve on your head, improve on your first touch, all them things. It never, never stops. And I think that that's one thing that I'm pretty sure that Unai Emery would create an environment where the team development comes first, but followed closely by individual development. How can we make these players better?
Kick-off in just under 10 minutes' time. Meanwhile, another Australian wicket, Nikesh Raghani.
Yeah, and it's that man again, Travis Head, this time trapping Brydon Carst plumb in front, giving out LBW on the field. Carst did review the decision, but the ball was being shown to crash in to the leg stump. So from a position of 202 for 2 in the 25th over, England are now 261 for 8 in the 41st.
Live commentary on Five Sports Extra. Back to Ibrox, Gavin Wallace.
Still Rangers 1, Hibs 0 with a couple of minutes plus injury time to go. We've had two great chances. Dwight Gale had a header from 8 yards out, just whistled by the post. And Joseph Bursic saved a great effort from Cyril Dess. It's a deep cross and the striker did everything right, put it to the far side of the goals. How he saved it, I don't know. This game is still alive. Rangers 1, Hibs 0.
Second half in Manchester City against Brighton in the Women's Super League. Mike Minor.
Yeah, still 1-0 to Manchester City. 20 minutes into the second half. Bunny Shaw's first of the WSL season, the difference. They are building though to try and create more chances, getting there. The final balls and decision making is what's letting them down. City 1, Brighton 0.
Thank you, Mike. Back at Portman Road then, we've got 7.5 minutes to kick off. Let's focus back in on Ipswich Town. Mark Schwartz, we talked about Sam Morsy earlier, the captain, the importance in central midfield. In that double pivot, as they say, Calvin Phillips has got a massive afternoon ahead of him now.
He certainly does. I mean, obviously, his reputation, his form that he showed when he was at Leeds was outstanding, hence why he got the move to Manchester City, something that didn't obviously work out for him. So he's been a journeyman of late and also struggled to find any consistency, and I think that's his biggest challenge. He's got to get back to, you know, what he did well at Leeds United, back to being consistently, one of the better players on the pitch. Staying fit, that's not always under his control, but something that he needs to maybe look at other parts of his day-to-day to try and improve upon. I just hope he gets back to that level of performances, because he was brilliant at Leeds, he was brilliant when he played for England, certainly the Euros,
I think it's been a bit of a shame to see him sort of slump to where he has been over the last couple of seasons. But today, another big opportunity for him.
The other thing worth mentioning, Ali, Ipswich have scored 3 this season so far, so only Southampton have scored less. What they did do in the summer is spend a lot of money on attacking talent. When you think Liam Delap, 20 million, Sammy Smodic, 9 million, when you add Jack Clark into that, you're talking about £45 million. It takes time for anybody to settle, but they really need them to fire.
They do. I mean, Kieran McKenna's given himself plenty of options there, and I think one of the things you'd have particularly noticed about Ipswich and their progression through League One, but particularly the Championship last season, was the amount of attacking options they had in the squad then. They have even more now. And Kieran McKenna's use of substitutes in the second half on Ipswich's promotion run last season was incredibly effective. I mean, Amari Hutchinson had a fantastic season for Ipswich last season. He's now in his second season here. They paid big money for him to make the deal permanent. Liam Delap is off the mark, scored a cracking goal in the 1-1 draw against Fulham. He's the main man at the moment, but I think it's also about having that competition for places. Look at it, you know, on the Aston Villa point of view, you've got John Duran still sitting on the bench, which is probably why you're getting those performances from Morgan Rogers and Ollie Watkins, because they know as soon as they drop the levels, then John Duran is coming in. And I think the same for these Ipswich players. That is the challenge that Kieran McKenna is setting them. And actually, we've seen changes in the attacking positions today, with Chidozie Obane starting and Jack Clark as well. So he's constantly looking for that blend that is going to bring Ipswich that little bit more penetration. But Liam Delap is certainly a central figure in that.
They also, Andy, both actually these teams, both Ipswich and Aston Villa, have this interesting tendency to change either their entire forward line or a lot of their forward line in the sort of last half an hour of game, seemingly regardless of what's gone on. So that brings us on to depth, which also brings us on to John Duran. And I know he said Unai Emery this week the plan is at some point for him to play together with Ollie Watkins, but that's difficult given who else they've got.
Yeah, it is difficult, but it's the type of problem that Unai Emery would want, you know. Yeah. I think Duran, I'm not too sure how close the deal was. I know there was talk of him going to West Ham at one point, but it seemed to me like he didn't want to go. Like, he was pretty happy and pretty content staying. Now, there's only so long that can go on before you have to start getting him more minutes on the pitch. And, so you're thinking about, right, okay, what way can Emery get them both on the pitch? And, you know, probably having you think about how Villa play and how they try and create a box in midfield, and whether it's Watkins stretching the play, Duran coming in to kind of make one of them extra tens and create a box, I think there are possibilities and there's a way that you could work it. But at the moment he's having to be patient. But what you are guaranteed is when he comes on, he is definitely a threat when he comes on. You're not looking forward to him as a defender, and Nadim will tell you more than anybody. You're not looking forward to seeing him coming on for the last half an hour, right? Yeah. After Ollie Watkins has run you in behind for the last, for the full 60.
Yeah, that's the thing with these managers. Oh, let's bring on some new attackers, keep it fresh. And as the defender, you're thinking, for goodness sake. Oh, man, somebody wrap this game up.
And then, we saw it against Everton when Duran came on for Ramsey, Rogers moved to the left, and then we had Watkins and Duran for 25 minutes or half an hour up front, and that changed the game, really. They came back and won that game. So after an hour today, if Villa are drawing or behind, you know exactly who's going to come on. And like the boys have just said, if you're an Ipswich defender, I'm not sure you'd be too happy.
Mm-hmm. Right, just to keep you up to date with all of the scores then, very shortly we'll have the full-time whistle at Ibrox. Rangers still leading Hibs by 1-0 in the Women's Super League. It's Manchester City 1, Brighton 0 with 20 minutes to go. Then there's Everton against Manchester United, Leicester versus Arsenal, West Ham, Liverpool and Aston Villa against Tottenham. England are 270-8 off 42.1 overs in that decisive ODI in Bristol. We'll keep you up to date with so much great live sport across the day. Manchester United versus Tottenham to come in full at 4:30. Nadim, Andy, Jules, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure, sir.
Pleasure.
And Premier League Sunday's first commentary is Ipswich against Aston Villa with Mark Schwarzer and Ali Brucebull.
Thank you, Steve. Welcome to the sunshine in Suffolk. A packed Portman Road is absolutely pumping with noise. Ipswich Town, their third home game of this Premier League season. Their first time back in the top flight for 22 years. The first home game was the opening weekend against Liverpool. They lost that by 2-0. Fulham have been here. That one ended in a 1-1 draw. But Aston Villa, Mark Schwarzer, come here this afternoon knowing another Premier League win this season, it would be 5 in 6 games, would put them level on points with the leaders, Liverpool. And I think what we already know, having watched these two teams under Unai Emery and under Kieran McKenna, they are both going to go at each other. They both love to attack.
Yeah, very much so. I don't expect either of these sides to sit back. Ipswich, of course, at home. They need to try and get that first Premier League win under their belts of this season. I mean, it's, you know, the longer it goes on, the more frustrating it becomes, the more anxious people become, certainly the fans, the players, the doubt will creep in. So the last three performances were good performances. They've overcome that first start where they had the two difficult games with Liverpool and Manchester City. Now today, it's a great opportunity at home to put in a really good performance.
Looking for that first league win of the season, Ipswich Town. They've not won a home game against Aston Villa in the league since this very day back in 1984. 40 years ago, they won 3-0 with goals from Alan Sunderland, Russell Osman and Eric Gates. 10 games since then, Aston Villa have won 5. There have been 5 draws. Two teams just getting ready to go here. Full time at Ibrox in the Scottish Premiership, though. Gavin Wallace.
Rangers 1, Hibernian 0, Alia wins a win. It wasn't pretty except for Tom Lawrence's goal on 34. He cut inside and unleashed a cracking curling effort into the top corner. Hibs good, but not good enough. The gap back to 5 behind Celtic and Aberdeen. Rangers 1, Hibernian 0.
Thank you, Gavin. Ipswich Town players in a huddle, in the blue shirts, the thin.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary on this platform. You may be able to listen on an alternative platform. For further information and terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Unfortunately, due to rights restrictions, we're not able to bring you the current sports commentary.